Welcome back to season two of the podcast, where we're having candid conversations, open, honest, vulnerable conversations from people, friends, and clients that I admire. Our intention here is to educate and empower you. We are unscripted, we're live, and today we're diving in with my Instagram friend and colleague, James Rose.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here.
Ooh, I am so stoked to tell, or to have you,
Your intro is so good too. I love watching them live. Like we do ours live too. And like yours, you're nailing it. Like the whole open, vulnerable, honest. I was like, yes, I am comfortable with the energy in the studio that you have created today.
Thank you. Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and then we can talk about how we know or don't know each other.
Sure. So my name is James Rose. I am a non-binary actor. My pronouns are they, them. And I also work in the fitness world as both a yoga teacher. I do trauma-informed yoga and I am a health at every size personal trainer. And I also now exist a lot on the internet because we're in a pandemic. So that's like, I do a lot of Instagram things now, which is a way that I'm thrilled to have built a really special community. So that's how we met, I think.
Yes, it is. I started following you. I found you. I don't know. I think you had like, I remember that you had like 3,000 or 4,000 followers and you were just killing it.
Yeah.
And just like fully showing up as your authentic self. And that's what definitely drew me to you and just watching you on this journey over, I don't know how long it's even been. Has it been a year? Do you know when you got on the space?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, you know, kind of like everyone else, I've been on Instagram since it was like 2012 when it came out. Get us up the right track. Because I think we're close to the same age, right? Can I ask how old you are?
Yeah, I don't mind. I just turned 30 this year.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. Yay. Everyone says that your 30s are when you finally figure it out. I'm very excited. I have 5 years left until my 30s. So I'm like, cool. Well, wait. But yeah, that was, we found each other back when like I was just existing as like a personal account. It was like, oh, this is like my life updates. And I really resented social media and how, especially like I'm a gay person. So in the queer community, there are so many strange, unrealistic, pretty toxic standards of like what is considered beautiful, acceptable, lovable, worthy in the gay community, especially for you. Probably, I think we found each other when I was still conceptualizing myself as a man. So like I was probably talking a lot about like the gay male things, which now I'm like, that's why that never fit in my mouth. I was never a man. Yes. Other things fit in my mouth, but like that's a story for another podcast. And I just started talking about things that I didn't see anyone else talking about. And I was like, okay, let's at least try to make this space a little better than I found it. And if I can't find anyone else doing it, maybe I didn't search very hard because now I found tons of people where I'm like, you're so authentic, you know, present company directly included.
Right.
And I was like, I guess I'll just try this out and like talk about my personal life because, you know, it's so easy to be two dimensional on the internet and like, oh, I'm so beautiful. Here's me on a vacation. And I was like, here's me ugly, not on vacation.
Yes.
You know? That's what everyone wants to see, I think. They won't say that, but it's like, oh, thank you. Now I feel good about being ugly on vacation, not on vacation as well.
Right. I think it's amazing that you felt drawn to do that because so many people don't, like, I don't know. I talk to friends and they're like, well, Instagram's just for showing the highlights of your life. Like, that's what it is for. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, I'm with you. I strongly disagree. I think it started that way for sure. And like, that's definitely how a lot of people built followings and platforms. But the idea that the only reason your internet presence is worthy is to have a large platform is pretty flawed. Like you can have a tiny platform and directly affect somebody with what you do in a way that might change their life. I mean, in fact, we know like studying influencer marketing, we know that the people who have the most impact are like micro influencers. Like people who have between like 5,000 and 15,000 followers because people listen to them. Like, you know, for everyone listening, like think about the people whose voices you really listen to. It's either probably people you know or people you trust in your real life. Or if it's, you know, somebody on the internet that you don't know, it's someone who has cultivated enough trust with you that you feel like you know them, or you feel like you know them at least well enough to be interested in what's going on. And the people who are the like micro influencers are a much more exciting market of people because they have a lot more individual connections. Like I kind of fear things getting too big to where I can't like DM somebody, you know what I mean? I don't want to get to that place. And if I become very famous on television, maybe I will, and that'll be a luxury problem. But like, you know, I like the connection part of it. That's why we're there, because if we're not connecting with other people and just consuming, then like, ooh, what does that do to your mental health?
Yeah, big time. And I feel like it's, I feel like I just hit the table with my knee. feels like a bit of a slippery slope, with like cultivating trust, especially, and just like, especially nowadays, I feel like it's a whole like formula in and of itself, which is just like, you know, make me throw up.
Right.
Do you have any like thoughts about like suggestions for boundaries, or how, like, about how you hold that authentic space online?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I probably, around the time when we connected with each other, you were actually one of the only people that I connect with that I don't know in real life. Besides like that I follow, that I engage with, that I'm like actively interested, because I think what you do with your platform is exciting, and I think it's fresh. And I know that when I go to your page, I'm gonna walk away feeling better than when I got there. And those are the accounts that I need in my life. You know, I love looking at my friends and thinking, oh my gosh, you look so great in that new outfit, or I'm so glad that you got this promotion, or good for you for having a birthday party with masks on in a park 6 feet away. You know what I mean? Yes. Like that kind of thing. I like celebrating my real life friends. You know, that's a way that we can cultivate relationships, especially in the pandemic. But outside of that, like earlier on in my, you know, relationship with social media, I followed a lot of people that I didn't know. And then I just felt like shit about myself all the time. Am I allowed to curse on this podcast?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. I felt like shit all the time because I was like, wow, I don't look like that hot Insta gay. You know what I mean? In some ways I do, and in some ways I didn't. And I was like, I don't need to look like him. He's him. I'm me. Like, we are different people, and comparison is the thief of joy. Like, this is a face-tuned photo and I'm sitting here comparing myself to it, and absolutely not. So I actually draw the boundary of nearly everybody I follow is somebody that I know in real life who I want to be invested in. Just because I know you in real life doesn't mean I want to be invested in your social media. Like, we all know that person who's like an MLM girl that's like, buy my shakes, and we're like, absolutely not.
Like, no. To be that bitch.
Oh my God, it's so funny that I brought that up.
I love it.
That's okay. I used to be like that thin person that was like, I'm so brave for posting a picture of myself without flexing. And like, that was also like really toxic to the fat community and to like the eating disorder recovery community, which I was a part of. So we all, look how far we have grown. And in a year, I hope I can look at this and say, look how far I've grown from now too. So
big time.
I set the boundary of, I like to either know you in person, or I want to learn from you. I want your presence on the internet to be enriching to me in some way, to where I either walk away feeling better or empowered to take action on something that I may not have been before. And that's a pretty strict set of criteria, but I find that those boundaries really help me go on the internet and think, I'm going to enjoy this, you know?
I love
that. How about
that?
You?
Yeah, that's a really great, I feel like you have a very cut and clear boundary.
It has taken years. Let us be very clear. I did not come up with this last week. A lot of crying sessions later.
Yeah. I think I had to split myself out a little bit there. I went through a phase where I like combed my Instagram and I created a personal account, and I only follow people that I know in real life on there. Like people that I wanted to be able to share widely, like things that are going on with like my family, and that I also want to be able to tap in. And like you were mentioning, all of the events that friends are doing, and just like continue to be in touch in that way. And I think on my Instagram, I end up like my main account, I guess business account. I tend to follow more folks, people that seem like they're being authentic, that are, you know, spreading the good word. And exactly like you said, that I feel like I'm leaving feeling their page feeling empowered. And I'm curious, like, what else do you have to share to empower me with? And that's usually the people that get a follow from me. And, you know, with the possibility, maybe we could connect too, like somebody that feels reachable, tangible.
Yeah, I think there's something there about the reality needs to be someone, it's like, oh, would I want to go get lunch with you? Like, would I want to go get a cup of coffee with you? And the majority of influencers, I don't. And I'm proud to say that because there are a lot of people who, there's no shame in making money off of like building a brand. I don't think that that's shameful, but I do think that if your brand is harming communities, like I think we absolutely have to say unfollow. Like, you know, what you're doing is really harmful to a friend of mine, to a community I care about. Like, I can't engage with this. Even if I am inspired by your work, there is a higher purpose here that's like, oh, okay, well, but you know, by being a follower of yours and allowing you to have this platform, I'm allowing you to make money off of marginalizing other people. So.
Yeah, and I feel like we're waking up to that this year more than ever. Like it's just becoming very clear, and I love that we're seeing that movement. I will also admit I've come up against, like, especially with the BLM uprising in May, there were quite a few people and accounts that I was just, it was really hard for me to just unfollow and come to terms with, because it's people that I have also felt connected with. I've watched them grown. I've, you know, like the Instagram friend thing. And I'm, but then it was just like I was reaching out and like, hey, I really want to help you see how this is actually harmful, or I don't feel like you're getting the full picture. Can I offer you a different perspective? And just like nothing. Didn't get any response, no engagement. And it really brings up like some turmoil within my body to experience that.
Well, it's a personal rejection, of course, but then there's also the ideological rejection of like, I am trying to stand up for a group of people that I care deeply about. And that rejection is less about me. Like, it's like, I don't really care what you think about me. My job here is to advocate, right? This is bigger than our personal relationship. And that kind of rejection, there's a betrayal there for sure. It's like, I thought you were better than this. Like, I want you to care about this. What does it say about me that I invested so much time in you and wasn't aware that you didn't care about this? Like, was I complicit or was I just ignorant or both? Like, there's a lot of deep work that has to be done there. And I think that just goes to show how powerful social media is. And how we not have to be careful about it, but how we just have to be mindful. Because if we're aware of what we're doing and what we're consuming, we have so much more power over it, as opposed to just being influenced by whatever. And this does not have to be by influencers. You know, like your closest circle has more influence over you than like what's your name with a million followers, you know? So.
Do you feel like following, because you said that in the beginning you didn't know anybody on Instagram and you just like followed folks. And I look back at that stuff and I feel like that really helped me really become who I am, because I started following more like fat positive babes and queer folks. And I was just, it really encouraged me to dream and like see myself and just like be like dream out bigger for my life. Did you experience that at all?
Oh, that's so special. I'm glad that you shared that because I have not had that experience. So I think partially because the people who are embracing their queerness in, like, let's backtrack to when I still understood myself as a man, even though I'm not. I was looking at like the Instagay influencers, and their platforms were not about celebrating your queerness. Their platforms were about working out, and their platforms were about like what they looked like and being a thirst trap. And there is totally a place to be a thirst trap online. Like, and I don't think that inherently is harmful. I think that that can be liberating. And I mean, that's not body positivity. I do think it's like important to be clear about that. That's like having a positive body image or, you know, loving yourself, but that is not the radical act of accepting bodies at all sizes that was started by Black women online, you know, who are not still and were not then at, you know, adequately represented in the media. And so I did the opposite, actually. I started following educators that made me uncomfortable about what I was doing. So a lot of health at every size people, like I remember Jessamyn Stanley and the fat sex therapist and Rachel Cargle. And these were back when, at the risk of sounding like an original, like this was back when these people did not have big platforms. This is like 8 years ago, right? And maybe 6 years ago. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, like, okay, so if this person is saying this, and I am, you know, I am exhibiting the behavior that they say is harmful, one of us has to change, and it's probably not them. So I surrounded myself more with people who challenged me, and I started to use it as a tool to understand more about myself. And that's how I found more people that allowed me the language, or I wouldn't say allowed, just afforded me the language to understand my gender. Because people whose politics were forced to be radical by their identities as fat people, as people of color, as fat people of color, as fat trans people of color, you know, all of those different intersections forced that, like they couldn't walk away from that every day. That's who they were. And so then I started to learn, oh wait, some of this like gender-based language around being non-binary is really resonating with me. Let me dig deeper into this. And so it was through people like that where I found more out about myself, but I didn't see anyone quite at the intersection that I was talking about, like eating disorder recovery and gender and being queer in a way that wasn't like, look at my abs. So I was like, okay, well, here's a niche. Let me just talk about this. Not as a way to capitalize on anything, but just like, if this voice isn't out there, it's someone we've got to talk about this. Like, I don't think I'm the go-to voice on any of those things, nor should I be. But I was like, no one in my circles is talking about this. So therefore, and this is back, you know, when I had like 2,000 followers. And it's like, okay, if no one in my circles is talking, then like, I will. Let's start a discussion. And truly, it was, I think I actually started just talking about my sex life online. I think that's what it was. And people were like,
Wow.
yeah, it was really wild because like nobody else was talking about the horrors of gay hookup culture. And
Oh,
yeah, so I was like, let's just talk about sex. If I put my life out here to be, you know, on the drawing board, on display, like I don't have much shame about this. So if we can, you know, like take this and run with it, like maybe something good will happen. I really don't know if anything good has happened from that or not, but it's certainly been good for me personally.
oh my God, I
Like,
think tons of good has come from it. So much.
thanks.
Yeah,
Thanks.
I definitely feel super empowered just watching people share their journeys through sexuality, especially online, and just sharing like I guess some of the hard intersections for me right now in my life are definitely sexuality and gender. So I'm very fascinated and just like taking a lot of that in. And I think I'm doing currently more what you're describing it is tapping into communities and individuals online that I feel like I could don't know so much. Like I have things to learn and to gain, and especially in understanding myself.
Absolutely. We, as a queer community, especially for people who were assigned male at birth, we don't have mentors because they were wiped out by the AIDS crisis, right? Whereas, and the missing piece of that is queer women, lesbians, and non-binary people who were assigned female at birth that like were not that they didn't contract AIDS because they did, but certainly not at the high volume that we did for gay men. Are they're the missing piece of the history, but they were quieter because, you know, like women and people who are presumed feminine are forced into these very submissive roles in society, right? And so being out as a queer woman is not particularly safe because there's so much rampant biphobia and lesbophobia, even within our own queer community, right? So that makes sense that like reaching out to find those people online is like our gut instinct. And then for people like me, who's like I was assigned male at birth. So when I'm looking at mentors, I want to see how people like with my specific set of identities are navigating the world. And I don't have mentors. We are truly mentoring each other because, like, I don't have people that are 50 to talk to and be like, how did you get through your 20s as a gay person? Like, they all, I mean, the majority of them fell victim to a disease, or it's such a difficult thing to talk about that, like, they can't be open about that. And I understand and respect that. And there aren't enough of them to go around. And, like, we don't need to go try to sap all the inspiration we can out of the, like, few wonderful leaders that we have left, you know? So I do think that there is a lot of community mentoring, which is not to romanticize it, but I do think it's really special. Like, you know, would you and I be having a conversation about understanding who we are and defining what queerness and what gender in any way looks like for ourselves if we weren't forced to be trailblazers, you know? So.
I love that. Community mentoring. I don't think I've ever specifically heard that term
I
used.
haven't either. I might have just made it up.
That's great. That's fabulous.
I can't think of a source where it came from, but it was born out of like the sex work community takes care of each other on a level that's like you will probably not see in many other communities because it's so under the radar and has to be for safety purposes that like I work with a couple of outreach projects that are super near and dear to my heart for sex work community care, and like you have to mentor each other because like you're the only person who has been there. It's like the only people you can trust are the people who have done it because like your identity, your safety, like the legality of what you're doing is all on the line anyway. So you only have each other to trust. And I think that that does apply to the queer community as a whole. I don't think we're great about listening to each other and holding space for difficult conversations, whereas the sex work community, in my experience, is much more open to accountability and understands things more from a harm reduction standpoint than the queer community as a whole. But it's because the queer community as a whole is also bigger and has so much more privilege. So,
Right. Big time. Do you want to speak? I know you have that background too with like trauma-informed yoga. Do you want to speak
yeah.
at all to how you feel that like community like offers a healing space for us?
Absolutely. What a great segue. Like, you nailed that. I just want to point that out. Like, that
Thank
was so
you.
good. Yeah, I fell into trauma-informed yoga pretty much by accident because I was finding healing in community, like, you know, content warning for the next maybe 30 seconds about sexual assault. I experienced a pretty brutal sexual assault 2 years ago, almost to the day.
Oh,
So it's like my really special anniversary where I'm like, wow, I am so much further than I ever thought I would be 2 years ago. And in order to heal from that and just get my footing, honestly, I was a wreck. And I was all over the internet about being a wreck because that was kind of how I decided to heal, was going into group fitness classes and moving as a community. And at the time, I was doing some yoga-based stuff that had more intensive plyometric movements and more dance-based elements, and I found community healing in that. That program ended up not being the right fit for me, and I started getting more certifications in other things. And I found trauma-informed yoga through a teacher of mine. Her name is Sophia Holly. She's at Blissful Embodiment on Instagram, and I love her. If you don't know her already, you might love her stuff.
Yeah, I don't know her
She
yet.
Works with a program called Exhale to Inhale, which is a nonprofit that specifically does trauma-informed yoga for survivors of domestic violence and sexual violence. And oftentimes those two things go hand in hand. And I just took a class like just to support, like as a fundraiser type of thing. And I was like, I hate this. This is not, I
Really?
was like, this is bad. Like, what is this?
Oh my
And
God.
anytime, the framework for it is about offering a space for people to move however they want to, when especially when you've been traumatized. The Body Keeps the Score is a pretty solid study on this, but when you've been traumatized, you are trained to do certain things for survival, and it is imperative in your healing to have space where you can express yourself in whatever way feels good to you, in whatever way feels representative to you. It does not have to be about the trauma at all. It's simply about allowing a space for freedom, physically and emotionally. And I resented that. I was like, I don't need this. And it was because I needed it more than anything. Like, my
Right.
reaction to this was totally, and I know that about myself. If I go in and I'm like, I hate this, I'm like, that means I must learn more about it. Like,
Oh
this
my
is going to be so good for me, and I'm not going to like it, but it's going to be good. And that's what happened with trauma-informed yoga. I was like, this is a space where there are no rules, there are no expectations, there are only options to learn about myself and connect deeper with the kind of movement and the things that I want to do to express myself. And so, of course, I ended up getting trained in that, and I apply those principles to how I teach in chain gyms and at studios because all of us have experienced trauma. Regardless of the labels you want to put on that, we have all been through something difficult. And that sits in our bodies somewhere. We carry that within us. And it's not so much that we have to let it out, because there, I don't believe that just every single traumatic incident we ever have can be excavated out of us. I don't think that we can just get rid of it, but I do think that we can work with these things. And I think that they don't have to be our enemies. And trauma-informed yoga taught me vessels that I could hop on board to start learning about how I could work with those things. And a lot of that is offering options for people to try different things. It's not dictating. It is removing authoritarian ideology, like everyone do this next from your teaching. I'm from a family of teachers, so like pedagogy of the oppressed, you know, the person who stands at the front of the room and lectures everybody else is like something we talked about a lot because everybody was a teacher in a different sphere and like was finding different things effective. So shock of shocks, I also became a teacher. And I believe that in order for us to heal, we certainly don't do it alone. That's from my personal experience, like in recovering from my own sexual assault. I found connecting to my sexuality through movement, regardless of whether it was sexual or not, with other people made me feel whole. And it made me remember the joy in connecting with other people because when I was traumatized, I was afraid of reconnecting with other people. I was so afraid of being hurt again. And I was afraid more that I would not recover again. You know, it was less about the pain and more about what the long term would look like for that. And connecting with other people through physical movement, you know, even just listening to somebody breathe on their mat next to me and knowing that they were having a completely different experience, but a fully human experience expressed through movement was special. And I liked that. And I felt like we were in something together. And there's a transformation where I found after I left a yoga class, I would feel more like myself. And so I thought, you know, how can I offer this to the people that I'm teaching?
Yeah, that is so beautiful.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I took a 20-hour trauma-informed yoga training last winter, last fall.
No way. What did you learn? Or what
What
excited you about it, if anything?
was that last question?
I said, what did you learn, or like what excited you about that, if anything?
Oh my gosh, it was like this huge resonance in my soul that just felt like a full circle moment, because I started with personal training for my journey like back in 2012. And so I was like, oh my God, like what? Like learning to be in your body transmutes trauma, like, and being comfortable and like breathing. And like, I guess I realized that a lot of what I already do kind of is through a trauma sensitive lens, just with like the options and holding space and things like that. But I had absolutely no idea about it, and I didn't have the education or the language to use to help people like actually be healing with this. So I just had this like crazy sensation, and I tend to be like totally like just a bubbly person, and I was trying to contain it because we're also talking about a lot of heavy shit, like learning about oppression and the intersections of like everything. And I'm very much still. That was like my awakening to that in that class. And so I'm very much still finding my language and my footing in that area. But it resonated with me so much that I am thinking about taking diving deeper. I want to do the 300-hour course and like learn about it.
That's what I did. My 300 hours. So like there's the 200 and then the five or whatever. My advanced, air quotes, advanced, really, none of us know anything. Like we are all so on this journey. Training was in a lot of trauma-informed work. I recently read Susanna Barkataki is an Indian woman who is on Instagram that talks a lot about decolonizing yoga. And she wrote relatively recently, maybe during the pandemic at some point, about how all yoga is actually trauma-informed yoga and how Western people, and specifically white people, have taken yoga to mean trauma-informed when it was always meant to be that way. And how we've actually commodified it to be something that's like marketable for a community. And so I'm learning even more about that. You know, now I'm like, oh, okay, so is this the proper language to be using? Like, you know, should all yoga be this way? There is a specific methodologies that we, you know, for working with specific populations that we know are more effective than others, but you know, should we all be looking at yoga from a trauma-informed lens if we're really looking at the roots of where this cultural practice came from. So.
I think that is so fascinating, especially because I also think of like westernized yoga turned into like power yoga, which was like directly right in line with diet culture and thin, able-bodied wellness.
Absolutely. I mean, that was part of the reason I got into fitness to begin with was to combat that because I hated it. I didn't feel comfortable going into a gym. Like once identified that I had an eating disorder and that I had an unhealthy relationship with the gym because I was trying to change my body to fit the acting industry that had a lot of toxic ideologies and requirements as far as what your body can look like, I started investing more in like, what are our antidotes to this cultural ideology that's just, I mean, that's a cultural pandemic in and of itself, diet culture to begin with.
Oh my gosh, seriously.
Yeah, and I became a personal trainer because I thought I would not feel comfortable with a personal trainer because I can't find anybody who lives in New York which is wild. You would think of all places. And I also didn't look that hard to be completely honest, but like the most accessible people at your chain gyms where like, you know, I could have a membership because I taught group fitness classes there. None of those people had shared similar ideologies. And I was like, all right, well, let's look into this further.
I just remembered a story that you shared on your Instagram that really resonated with me like a while ago. And it was about you were somewhere like you said you were getting something out of a vending machine and some like bro dude came up to you and was like, I can show you how to lift. And you like piped back and you were like, actually, I'm like, I believe in health at every size. And like, I'm a personal trainer. And I was so like, just in awe of that. And that really inspired me.
Yeah, I remember exactly what story you're talking about, obviously because it happened to me. I was at a Panera Bread, which is funny, and I had like gym clothes on because it was near where I was working and I was grabbing lunch on the way to something else, and I love Panera, I just do, and we can disagree on that, but like, you're probably wrong, and...
I don't eat bread, but they have good cookies and food and all other things.
I have no like reason for liking it besides I'm like, I don't know, it tastes good, like salads, I don't, whatever. So I think they're creative. whatever, James. So I was at the Panera Bread and I had like my gym bag and stuff, and for some reason, I don't remember how it came up, but the guy asked me something and I said I was a personal trainer and he said, well, you don't look like a personal trainer. And if you've never seen a picture of me, I'm tall and I'm very thin and like there, I have like toning to my muscles because I'm thin, but not because they're like inflated, right? As we see with many people on the internet that are personal trainers. And I said, well, that's because I'm a health at every size personal trainer. And like that, you know, I don't believe that our image should be our currency in this business. And like, you know, anybody can be strong no matter what they look like. You know, some of the strongest people I work with live in the largest bodies. Yes. Like, for sure. You know, I mean, think about it. Like, I have so many people who are like self-identified fat friends. So like, to be clear in this context, using the word fat is a descriptor. And like, I use that not to shame anyone. Like I think fat is just a descriptor and like is neutral. Like, you know, it's just like saying thin is neutral. Like that shouldn't be good. Fat shouldn't be bad. Moving on. I know so many fat people that because they carry extra weight on them every day, you know, not extra weight, let me rewind. I'm unlearning some of my fat phobic language in the present. Because they carry more weight on them than some thin people do, they are stronger. And so like when they get, you know, on a Stairmaster or something like that, or they are doing any sort of like leg press, they blow all the thin people out of the water with what they're able to do because they literally carry around more than the rest of us do. So they're literally stronger and people are always surprised by this statistic. And to me, it's just science. Like that makes sense.
Yeah.
Of course, like you're doing more work than a thin person is every day because you have more weight on your body than a thin person does. So,
right.
Duh. Yeah. Which I find really exciting. And there are some really wonderful like fat activists who are also lifters that talk about this, but you know, it's important to notice that. And like, you know, when we're going into somewhere like Panera and the person's immediate thought process is a personal trainer must look like a specific thing. Yeah. Well, then it's our responsibility to dismantle that. And like, I'm not the one who's most marginalized by that comment, but like it hurt my feelings in the moment, but that's going to affect different communities much worse than me.
Yeah. Well, I love that you in that moment too just had like the language and the confidence to be like, excuse me, let's put this straight, please.
Yeah, I'm not one to shy away from not an argument, but a disagreement. Like there are people who shy away from confrontation and I cannot relate. Like Mostly because I use it as an opportunity to learn something. Like, I don't go into a confrontation thinking I know everything, but I know my lived experiences, right? Like, I know that I'm a personal trainer. I know that people of all body sizes can be strong and healthy. And I mean, health at every size, just as a principle in and of itself, I think is new, but also gaining enough traction to where it's getting a lot of misinformation thrown in around it. And the idea is not that everybody at every size is at their like optimal health, but that we can promote healthy behaviors for everyone at every size without tying it to weight. Because we know like that weight stigma is one of the most dangerous things we perpetuate in society against fat people and against people who are in bodies that are often marginalized or disabled bodies to begin with. So there's a lot of that rhetoric where everyone in the wellness community gets really bent up about it. And in truth, it just requires some more research to understand, like, oh, okay, so our job as fitness professionals is not to discriminate. And like, if I walk into a fitness class, we cannot assume that I am more fit than the person who weighs twice as much as me. Like that ideology we've got to unlearn. And I mean, kind of bringing that full circle, like we're not great about having that conversation in queer spaces either. Like the body shaming in the queer community is horrific.
Yeah, it's still like I think I get so like lost in my own little bubble sometimes, and I just forget that it's still like alive and well, even when I hang out with my girlfriends, for example. It's just like, are we really still here? Like picking each other apart and talking about like what we want to spend to like change our bodies. And yeah, it's a challenging space, but I love that it is gaining traction and that we have like a lot more tools and people like talking about that this is like this is I don't know, this I want to say like this is a real thing. It's shocking that people don't like you're saying it's you break it down like this, it's so simple, it's science, it's math, like whatever,
Right.
you
I
know.
think we're, well, science has not gotten a great rap lately. So it's like we say, oh, it's science as if that's going to change things. But like, people still aren't out there wearing masks. So like, I don't, I have to rely on science less. But, the basic human decency is like, oh, okay, well, even if that person wasn't healthy, like, that doesn't mean they deserve to be treated less.
Yes,
Like, that
exactly.
does not mean that they don't deserve access to love, care, gentleness, and to the gym. Like, and
Right.
it doesn't mean that we should be treating them differently for being in the gym. Like, that is what really grinds my gears about, like, especially in the New York fitness circuit. Like, I wonder if on your coast things are any better, but we walk into, everywhere in New York is promoting weight loss and looking like a specific body image and like the thin ideal and all that stuff is like considered the epitome of health. Like I imagine it's the same where you are.
Yeah, it is very, very much the same. Like the main gym that I have gone to here absolutely promotes like all of that, and it's constantly like weight loss, nutrition challenges and things, and I'm just like I get into conversations. I usually pretty much was only using the sauna to be honest at my gym. And I'd get into conversation with people there about like I don't know, it's just so fascinating too, people you meet in the gym and like we're just all in the like generalized statement, but so many people are just in this headspace of trying to make their bodies look different. And like, and just like, I could, like somebody, I got in a conversation with a man that was like, well, I couldn't do this move because like my belly got in the way. And I kind of broke it down with him and talked about, creating different options and being able to work with your body and that it really doesn't matter like the size of your belly, but more that you're there showing up for yourself and like being in your body. And he was like, why don't the other instructors like talk about this? And I was like,
Yeah, one of the greatest gifts about being offered a position to teach in a wellness space is that you can be the conduit to allowing someone freedom in their body. And that does not mean like, oh, wow, I'm now flexible in this yoga pose. That can mean, oh, now I have more tools and understanding to where I can make this move work for me in my specific body. Like one of the reason that I have stayed in the industry, despite the like horrific rhetoric that we have to walk into every day, like I literally have to walk into the gym and go, someone is going to say something awful today. Like, and I knew it. Like, you know what I mean? And they're not going to mean harm by it. They're going to truly think that they are promoting health by saying this. And so it does require a compassion that needs to be extended on my end to like enter that conversation. But like, the beauty of it is like I work specifically with like when I personally train, I am a trainer at a space where it's all senior citizens. Most of them are immigrants, most of them are women, and many of them are blind. And I am there in all different body sizes. And I love that because like the way that I teach the women who are blind is very different than the way that I teach the women who can see. And the way that I teach all of them about learning how to be in their bodies at, you know, the ripe age of 75. And like many of them are doing this for the first time. You know, they're like, oh, okay. So like, this is what exercise is supposed to feel like. And I'm like, yeah, it can like actually just feel really good. And like, that is such a gift to be able to find the access point to allow someone the space to learn about what their body needs. You know, the idea that we as instructors have all the answers is untrue. We don't, but like, I sure hope that we have the tools to allow someone the space to find the answers within themselves and that we have, you know, tips to guide them along the way. But I think it's just a really special relationship and opportunity that we get to have to say, okay, you know, one of the ways that we can resist the system is by allowing space for everyone to figure out what actually works for them. So that way, the next time they're in the gym or they're in this class, they can have a toolbox that they can use to get the most out of that situation. Accessibility is like probably the most important thing in fitness that we never talk about.
Yeah. I just couldn't agree more. I'm just over here taking it in. My body's like, yes, just like the chorus back here singing.
Yes. Now we're not in gyms because we're in a pandemic. I think maybe you wanted to talk about that. I don't remember.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We can talk about that. Cause I know that you had COVID. I messaged you and you were like, yep. I got the Rona.
Wait, do you have it too?
No, that's what you told me.
I was like, wait, did you? Yeah. I was like, this would have been missing information in my brain.
Right, no, I didn't. But yeah. Do you want to share anything about that?
Oh, sure, it sucked.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know, we won't make this segment like a big fear-mongering segment, but like, it was really awful. And for some background, I'm a non-disabled person in terms of like, I have no underlying conditions that affect any of like my respiratory system or affect my medical stance at large. And I work out for a living. I'm a dancer. So in addition to working out for a living, I dance for a living, like, you know, when I'm on stage. And I was just coming off of doing 8 shows a week, like at a regional theater out of town, which was the best. I was doing Newsies. I loved it. I want to do Newsies again for everyone listening that casts Newsies. Hello. I will do it again. And I was probably in the best conditioning shape of my life where I was like, I can do anything. And it felt great. And then all of a sudden I couldn't breathe.
And, oh, wow.
We went on lockdown in New York City mid-March. And ironically, I had just been at a couple of the chain gyms that I work at. And I had gone to the HR managers and said, you know, there's another big chain gym in New York that just had their first confirmed positive case. And we know that gym areas are super spreaders, incredibly high risk areas, because we are in small groups where we all spit on each other, like unintentionally, you know? And I said, I want it documented that as an employee, I feel uncomfortable in the work environment and that I went to you. And they were like, well, we can't really close because, like, you know, it's really important for everyone's mental health to be here. And I said, you know, with some of these older populations, mental health is not outweighing their physical health. Like, we are doing them a disservice by keeping this gym open under the guise that we're going to be safe. Like, you know, that doesn't matter when someone's hooked up to a respirator. Like, oh, I got those great yoga classes in. Like, absolutely not, ma'am. Really? So I was like, I want this documented. Like, I really care about these communities. This isn't okay. And they were like, great. Well, like, you can just send out your classes. And I said, that is not the answer, you know?
Yeah.
And then we went on lockdown that night. And five days later, I hadn't moved from my couch. I had watched half of Gilmore Girls.
Oh, wow.
I had never invested in excellent work, everyone. I was like, oh my God, this is me and my mom. And then I was like, why haven't I moved in 5 days? Why am I so tired? And I thought, maybe it's just because I haven't gotten a day off since January and it's March. And then I was like, interesting, I have a fever. Interesting. I have like full body chills. Interesting.
How interesting.
And I was like, I wonder like what these symptoms are, because I never get sick. That I guess is another important piece of information.
Yeah.
And so I Googled my symptoms, and then of course I looked at them, and I swear to you, it's 1:30 in the morning. I'm in my apartment alone. Luckily, my roommates were out of town. And I said, "Oh my God, I think I have the coronavirus." And then my doorbell rang. Like,
Oh.
no joke. Not the buzzer to my apartment, the literal unit doorbell at 1:30 in the morning during lockdown. And I was like, oh, the FBI agent in my phone is working overtime. Like, I don't know what's going on. I was so scared. I hid in the closet for like 20 minutes.
Oh
And yeah, because I was like, well, if I have COVID, I can't open the door.
my
Like,
God. Yeah,
also, what do you need from me at 1:30 in the morning? Like, I don't know you.
yeah.
Oh, terrifying. And then I spent the next few days getting progressively worse. And I got to the point where I stuck a whole clove of garlic in my mouth and I couldn't taste anything. And
Oh, wow.
yeah, I got pretty lucky. I had a relatively mild case to where I was prepared to go to the hospital because my symptoms were going down that path. But I did not get to the point where I couldn't breathe badly enough to where I would have needed oxygen. And my friends who were doctors and nurses that, you know, live around me were able to, they didn't come to me, but I called them and was like, "Can I solicit your advice? I'm really scared." And they were like, "You almost definitely have it. Like, you know, all you would do is come in and take a test to confirm what we already know. Like,
Yeah.
none of the, even if you took this test, it wouldn't change our course of action. So don't leave your apartment and risk infecting anyone else. You know,
Yeah.
you will most likely make a full recovery." And to an extent, I have. I still can't smell. It's been, that was March. This is November. So
Oh,
my olfactory bulb has really been cut down. I can smell some things. But like, I left the gas stove on in my apartment for 17 hours, and I didn't know it until the fire department literally broke in and tried to rescue me. And I was like, "I'm not dying." And they were like, "How?" And I was like, "I don't know." And they're like, "Don't you smell that?" And I was like, "No." And they're like, "You left your stove on." And I was like, "Oh, I'm so
oh
sorry."
my gosh, Jen,
Yeah,
that's
I know.
huge. You died from gas poisoning.
Like, how I survived that. And they're like, "Are you good?" And I was like, "I'm good." And
Wow.
but point being, I can't smell.
Yes,
So
it's confirmed.
yeah, I've lost about maybe 15% of my hair,
Okay.
which you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell, but like, I can tell when it comes out in the shower. Like, that's way more than it's ever come out before. And it, like, you run your hands through it and you're like, "That's thinner." And I've talked to a couple nurses who also had it that are experiencing similar symptoms. And which is wild. We don't really know how this is going to affect people long term, but
Yeah.
you know, the most important thing is like, okay, so if that's what it did to me as a young person, and I know multiple other young people who were hospitalized from the virus, like, this is such a serious thing, and I wouldn't wish it on anyone. Like, even when 45 got it, I was like, like, tempting to be like, ah, but I'm like, I don't think that's the answer. Like, I
Yeah.
don't. And I also was like, I wish we would take it seriously. You know, like, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but
Well,
it is.
no, not. I just want to say, I think these conversations are incredibly important, and especially it's more important for people to hear that other people do know of the things happening. Just for context, I actually live like an hour north of Seattle in a tiny little farm town, and it's very conservative here.
Okay.
My whole family are Republicans and Trump supporters,
Oh, I'm so
and
sorry.
yeah, thank you. It's been challenging. And to have these, so it's like one side of my family, the other side of my family. I have two aunts that I love that are lesbians, and they checked in with me and they were like, you know, how are you doing? Do you know anybody that's had this? Like, how are you and your community being affected? Which is a lovely question. Whereas, like, other people in my family are like, this is bullshit. Like,
It's like,
I don't
oh.
know anybody that's had it. Like, yeah. And it's just like, that's another thing, just tying it back to social media, that I think is really important, is it allows us to understand beyond ourselves and to really like
Totally.
take that in.
Yeah, I ended up in a really good support group. We Are Body Politic, which was started by Fiona Lowenstein, has a support group that I was in for a little bit, like when I needed it, just to like share symptoms and experiences and things like that. Because it's at the time it was pretty misunderstood. Like, I did not understand the gravity of what was occurring. really during the time, which is good, because I stayed off the news because I didn't want, I knew that if my morale went down, then I was going to get worse. Yeah. And so I kind of tuned out the news for a while. I would check CDC updates just because I needed to know like what was going on. But there was a push for like an additional set of symptoms because like I experienced eye pain, ear pain, like diarrhea, nausea. I didn't vomit, but a lot of my friends did. Mm-hmm. And I lost feeling in my limbs for a little while, which was... Hello, dogs.
Yeah, I'm gonna pause. Okay, we're back.
And there were a lot of people like me who had these new symptoms, and so that ended up, you know, getting onto the CDC guidelines as like additional things that we don't really know about, but like that's what's happening to people. And I like woke up at the bottom of my shower and didn't know how I'd gotten there, type of thing. Like it was scary. Wow. And yeah, it is. And it's like, I think the worst thing about it is even though the disease itself does something really awful to you, and like, you know, a lot of people have made full recoveries, like myself included, which is really wonderful. I think the worst thing about it is it's illuminating how little people care for each other. You know, we talked earlier about community care, and we're watching the absolute opposite of it. It's like, okay, well, we know that all it takes is for you to put a piece of cloth over your face to mitigate the risk, and people are unwilling to do that. It's like, even if it didn't work, but like there was a chance that it did, I would still be doing it, not because I am a sheep, but because I care about other people. And like, you know, a lot of us, I think, are getting fatigued. I know I certainly am about like pandemic-based things. I'm like, oh my gosh, I just miss life the way that it was. You know, I miss being able to like go hang out with my friends, and I miss being able to go out and like experience the joys of life outside my house or apartment. Like, and the thing that I've been holding on to is that, okay, if my actions are able to save at least one life, then that has been worth it. Like if our staying home and our putting a cloth piece of fabric over our face, like, you know, mitigates the risk enough to where we could potentially save someone's life, it is worth it. Like, and I wish that things weren't so politically divided about that, because it's very simple. Like we do not have to be in the place that we're in if we just cared about each other a little more. And like care does not mean I'm right. Care means what does this person need? Like
I completely agree with you. And oh, okay, there it goes. I had an echo for a second. I'm just curious, do you happen to find in your own community at all that you are hearing like all different sides? Because at least where I'm sitting, especially like with my family being Republican and things like that, but also even in like the spiritual realm, I've encountered people and even friends that I do care about that are like, I mean, just so many differing opinions about it all. And I do completely agree with you. I always come back to, I'm like, can't we just do it? Like, just do it for someone else. Like, does it matter? Like, if it really like, just do it. That's all that you have to do. But it's fascinating to hear all of these different perspectives. And that is something that I, like a very thin silver lining that I'm finding during pandemic times is to, it's like we're learning self-awareness and to like really like what like our own beliefs, our own integrity and how to be in that. And it's challenging us to show up and be with our community and how do we support each other so that like flows and connects. Do you?
Absolutely. Yeah. What you mentioned about like the wellness community versus family is absolutely like a nerve. it really has kind of become our Achilles heel, I think, as a wellness community right now, besides the like systemic racism that has been there forever. Like that is not news unless you have been willfully ignorant about that. Yeah. But my family, for instance, is super progressive. Like, you know, my grandmother is sitting downstairs in her Ruth Bader Ginsburg sweatshirt donating to Planned Parenthood today.
Oh like my gosh.
Oh yeah. Like, wow. You know, like that's the kind of family that I grew up in, which is, I'm fortunate to have had that supportive upbringing. Like, for example, I never came out as gay for my sexuality. I came out as non-binary, but I never had to come out as gay because that wasn't a thing. That being said, like, we were a middle-class white family and, like, are definitely complicit in some things. And, like, there's been a lot of learning that I, as the person who holds the most marginalized set of identities in my family, have had to educate myself about and then educate everyone else a little bit more on too. But the
Yeah.
wellness world is its own breed of truly toxicity that I have not seen before ever. And it has just gotten worse during the pandemic. And I spoke out about like the COVID stuff when I was experiencing it. Not because I wanted to like instoke the fear in everyone. Instoke is a new word I just made up.
Love it.
I was thinking, I don't know what I was thinking. We'll just use it. And so many people, specifically affluent white people that got into wellness, are anti-vaxxers and are people who, tout themselves to be free thinkers or tout themselves to be individualists or simply value themselves over other people. I don't know how else to put it, but they do it in the name of spiritual wellness. It says you can like self-determine, like, oh, like if you're black, just like just work harder. Like it's that kind of mentality, which we know is racist in every form, right?
Right,
Like,
every form.
oh, like your gender is, this is my favorite one in the yoga community, is like, oh, your gender is actually just ego politics. Like you have to let that go. And I'm like, I'm gonna
Whoa.
let you go out
Yeah,
of my
good.
life.
Yeah, yes.
And it's
Wow.
like what you're getting out of like ego determining the way that we function is okay, there's truth in that. Like when we allow that to be the primary thing that gets in the way of our learning, that can be harmful. But my identity and the way that I understand myself and the language I've chosen to assign myself and the respect I'm asking for from everybody that I encounter, which is truly just use they, them as my pronouns. You don't even have to understand my gender identity,
Yeah.
just use the right words. That's the only respect I'm asking. That's not ego. That's not my saying I deserve this because I'm better. It's like in the society that we exist in, this is the best way that you can respect who I am. And that is a beautiful thing. Like that it just requires a couple of words and I'm like as happy as can be. Like,
Right.
wow, come on. Like for other people, you gotta do so much more.
Yes.
Which, that's not always true, but it's pretty simple and it's actually not ego driven. And that's the same camp that's like the anti-vaxxers. That's like, this is a hoax. And like, I'm just going to keep my mind strong and it won't affect me. And it's like, actually, that's so dangerous because that it's the ableism, I think, is what runs rampant in our community that like somehow we can love and light our way out of systemic issues, that we can love and light our way out of like being responsible for everyone having access to things. Like, you cannot meditate your way out of a pandemic. Like,
No.
you can meditate as a tool to cope with it. And I am all for that. You can journal, you can like do the self spiritual healing work, you can charge your crystals, like, whatever works for you, I am so down for. But you cannot use that as an excuse to cause harm. And when you walk outside and you try to run classes and like, don't wear masks and promote this ideology as if it were wellness and like say that like as a free thinker you somehow know better because you don't follow the news, like that's actually doing a lot of harm because it just shows that, oh, you're not affected by what happens from your actions. Like you will always be okay.
Yeah. And it encourages complacency. At least it did for me. And I see that so much too. It's like, well, I'm here shining my love and light and spreading that. And I'm just going to focus on this. And I don't have to like look around me. And then you like lift your head up and that overwhelm. And this, like, I see so many people, especially lately, saying, I don't know why I'm depressed. Like, do you really not know why you could possibly be depressed right now? Like, there's so.
Like, you can totally have a depression that is induced by like a situational depression. That's the word I'm looking for. That's a thing.
Yes. Oh, big time.
Really.
Well, and what I think is really fascinating too is, well, so I used to be all about the love and light, and I don't know if you're into the Enneagram at all.
I haven't gotten into it, but a lot of people are like, what is yours? And I'm like, I don't know, like INFP,
Right. Yeah,
which is the
for
Myers-Briggs. I'm like a Slytherin, like does that count?
sure.
But now J.K. Rowling is awful, so I'm like, I can't even identify as a Slytherin. Anyway, as you were
Oh.
saying, I
Yeah,
know.
well, my type with the Enneagram is just like the bubbly, like looking towards like love and light and just like elevating. That's like what I'm drawn to in my personality. But I also tend to avoid pain at all costs, which like pivots me to wanting to like look at everything through this bright lens. And I've found now, especially through like trauma-informed yoga and this path that I've stumbled down, that it's really the way to love and light is through the dark. and like learning how to hold that space and understanding like that shadow side of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There is, you know, there's so much of the wellness world that is taking these love and light concepts and redirecting them, I think, and like reclaiming them to mean what they're supposed to mean, as right. far as I'm concerned, that I think is really wonderful. And then there's a lot of other people that are like, oh, we can just heal systemic issues just by loving each other more. And they're actually right. Like, you can do that, but it is not love the way you think it is. It is not just like, oh, be nice to everyone. It's right. actually radically fucking up the system. Like, yes. it is going and shattering the barriers that, like, didn't allow other people. Like, if people who exist at identity marginalizations that are lower on the social ladder than you can't also fit through the same holes, you know, or like, yeah. that's not a great metaphor, but like, you see what I'm saying? If everybody else can't get through the same doors as you can, then the love and light that you need to apply to that situation is going to look different. You know, you can't just be nice to somebody and end transphobia. But like, right. you can, the kind of niceness and the kind of love that, you know, people like me, trans people, non-binary people are asking for is like, I actually need you to have a difficult conversation with everyone else. Like, I need to walk into your yoga studio and no one misgenders me, or everyone just asks what my pronouns are first. That is love and that is light, because that allows me to feel loved and allows me to feel like my light doesn't have to be dimmed when I walk into a place and am oppressed, you know, because then we take out the possibility of that happening. That's what love and light, I think, is supposed to be. And we've turned it into, like, you know, a way to for white women to feel okay about being white.
It reminds me a lot of what we were saying about yoga, how yoga has always been trauma-informed. Yeah, but then it's taken those different perspectives with, especially, like, power yoga. I'm going to hate on power yoga a little bit.
You know what? And I am too, with a complexity. Like, power yoga, the way that it's been marketed to us is yoga in fitness form, which is like totally colonizer mindset of like, let's take this sacred thing. Sacred's not the right word, because yoga isn't a religion. Let's take this culturally significant, well-developed, long-lasting ideology, and then let's make it about how well you do it.
Hold on.
Like, that's capitalism at its finest. But if, you know, the other side of that is power yoga can hold a really special place. And it's like, just because you do power yoga doesn't make you bad. Like, right. you know, the idea of going through a really challenging, rigorous flow, and challenging and rigorous doesn't mean 5 headstands. Challenging right. and rigorous might mean really slow, or doing nothing, or mm-hmm. holding space for the hard emotions, or stillness, or going really, really fast. Like, you know, power is multifaceted.
Yes.
And allowing that to be a tool to access your power and your greatness and the things in you that like you can stand up on, that is wonderful.
Thank you for breaking that down. That was a really great breakdown of yeah, what power yoga can be and what it's look like. I don't know. And I just feel this like pulsing sensation of like all the metaphors and like how it all ties together. And I've just really enjoyed this conversation with you today.
So have I. Thank you so much for letting me come and like diatribe about all these things that I care about.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, of course.
I really appreciate the opportunity. It's always such a special thing to be able to hold space with you, which I feel like we've only done like once before, like in the workshop. I think that's the only time I've ever like been on Zoom space with you.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that workshop was really special, by the way. I love everything that you have going on and that you're like collaborating and just keep putting yourself out there. Do you have anything else that's coming up?
I don't actually. Right now I am pretty not full of things, which is great, because yeah. Some of the part-time work that I do is like taking over, which is nice. Okay. But I just did a workshop on gender and sexuality with my friend Rachel Wright, and I just did I spoke at a National Eating Disorder Association event, which was a really special way to connect with the ED community. And I don't know, I'm looking at like, I'm constantly analyzing like, okay, my platform is like big and small at the same time, like in the grand scheme of life, pretty small. But like, when I think about like having that many people in a room would be a lot of people. I have such a
Right.
responsibility to this community. So a lot of it is like, okay, what am I going to do next with like this little community on the internet, like my little microcosm? What are the things that we can learn more about? So I'm actually more looking at like how I'm using that and like what I can do there. So
Cool.
that's what's next. What about you? What's next for you?
Oh, that's a great question. What is next for me? I'm launching my I launched an online movement studio last year, and
Congratulations.
thank you. Yeah, and then I got in my head about it, I think, is really what it came down to, but I decided to like close it up a little bit and do some more personal work. And I'm going to be reopening the doors at the end of November, so I'm
Oh,
excited
cool.
for that.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let me know about it because I'm interested. So.
Okay, for
Thank
sure, I will.
you
Awesome.
so much for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Thank you so very much for taking the time to tune into our conversation today. I hope that you're feeling empowered, fired up, inspired, and if you're really feeling like you want to dive a little deeper, don't forget I have plenty of free resources available to you on my website, as well as a handful now of online courses, including an online movement space that will be coming again, reopening this fall 2020. You can also sign up to have your own little candid conversation with me if you so desire, not recorded and in fact completely confidential. I offer self-care consults on a sliding scale, so you can feel free to check that out if you'd like some personalized, judgment-free lifestyle and stress management advice. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting me. And most of all, really, thank you so much for taking care of yourself. Yeah, let that sink in for a minute. Thank you for taking care of yourself. The world needs more people doing just that. Cheers to a conscious way of living, y'all, for ourselves, for our communities, and our planet. Until next time.